For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Martin McCloskey on fire. This is Mark McCloskey on fire on Newstalk STL.
I get knocked down, but I get up again. You're never gonna keep me down. I get knocked down, but I get up again. You're never gonna keep me down.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark McCloskey on fire. We're sitting in a situation right now in the United States where everything that we held near and dear in our entire lives is going away from us. I've been a lawyer for, I think, 39 years now. And when I was going to law school, we were told that what we were supposed to do is zealously represent our clients within the bounds of the law, which included any reasonable extensions of the law or reasonable reasons why that law should be changed or revoked. Unfortunately, today, we live in an environment where political speech is criminalized, where the representation of people who are being prosecuted for criminal political speech are then being prosecuted. And worst of all, attorney-client privilege has been abolished. And more than that, that if you zealously represent your client and they happen to be on the wrong side of politics, you'll be criminally charged yourself and the Bar Association will come after your license. I've had a little bit of personal experience in that, as has my wife, but the guy who has suffered the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune more than anybody I can think of for being an honest lawyer is our guest today, Mr. John Eastman. Welcome to the program.
Mark, thanks very much for that very kind introduction and also very insightful on what we're facing. It's really extraordinary. It's like we woke up one day and it's a different country. It's a Soviet-style tyranny rather than a freedom-based America.
It absolutely is. I mean, when you see, and we have a lot of January 6th political prisoners on the program, had Derek Evans on last week, for example, and when these people are declared guilty by the judges before they ever hear any evidence, when the evidence is suppressed against them, when they want exculpatory evidence produced, it's been destroyed, and then they can't get lawyers for fear of their lawyers having had happen to them what's happened to you. I mean, this is no longer a free country. This is no different than the Soviet show trials. You know, we have to have a trial before we find you guilty.
Right. Well, we have to go through the appearance of a trial before we issue the proclamation of your guilt, I think is a better. Look, I think this is part of why I've just gone through 10 weeks of what one commentator called the most expensive and longest bar disciplinary proceeding in history. It's not just about getting my scalp, which of course they want, but it's about scaring the hell out of everybody else who might dare to raise an objection to any future elections. Yeah. And make no bones about it, the 65 Project, which was one of the groups bringing these kind of complaints, filed one against me with the U.S. Supreme Court, has made very clear their goal is not just to disbar people, but to make them so toxic in their firms and their communities that right-wing legal talent will never want to take on these election challenges again. Yeah. That would destroy the adversarial system. Yeah. What you mentioned about the J6ers, it occurred to me here recently, 2024, welcome to 2024, everybody. It is the 75th anniversary year of the publication of George Orwell's 1984.
Yeah.
And here we are, and he called it 1984. He should have called it 2024, because what we are living with here is the government has spoken, and you not only have to repeat the lies the government is telling you, but you have to believe those lies or we will destroy you.
Yeah.
I give as proof of this the ridiculous settlement that came down back in mid-December up in Wisconsin of a civil suit by political activists against the electors in Wisconsin standing ground, as I believe it was at the trial court, but it went up on appeal and they were bleeding these guys dry with legal fees and they entered into a settlement. And the settlement, you know, didn't do any of the usual things like give people damages or anything that it was. We admit that we now believe that Joe Biden won the election. They had to sign that onto a settlement in order to avoid these extortionistic legal fees. I mean, it's really, and the J6ers are being put in solitary confinement if they refuse to repudiate that Trump won the election.
Yeah, but part of the charging documents are that they supported Donald Trump and they voted for him. Hey, you know, before we go on anymore, just for the sake of our audience, tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, you know, in to the extent that the media portrays you as some kind of a wild, radical right-wing extremist, it occurs to me that you were a law clerk for Clarence Thomas and dean of a law school.
Yes, I was. I the left has made me, I think, one of the, if not the most famous lawyer in America now. Somebody asked me why I didn't pursue my defamation and breach of contract case against the University of Colorado. I said, well, they continued to pay me the rest of the semester that they had me under contract for. So my damages would have been loss of reputation. But on the right side of the political spectrum, my reputation is as high as it's ever been. So, I clerked for Justice Thomas. I graduated from what was then and may still be the top law school in the country, the University of Chicago. I worked at one of the major national, international law firms in the country. I was one of the key lawyers in their appellate practice. I went into teaching. I taught constitutional law and property for over 20 years and served as dean at the Chapman University School of Law. While I was dean, we moved from near the bottom of the rankings to into the top 100 in a space of 3 years. That was really extraordinary. And I've been involved in over 200 cases before the Supreme Court on almost every major constitutional issue that's come down the pike over the last two decades.
So in other words, you have no idea what you're talking about.
I have no idea what I'll give you one example. The California bar lawyers who are saying that I didn't know what I was talking about, they issued a subpoena to the Supreme Court demanding that the Supreme Court produce the briefs I filed in the case in the Trump versus Pennsylvania case. And the clerk of the court wrote back and said, maybe you didn't get constitutional law 101. We're not subject to your jurisdiction. And oh, by the way, the information you're seeking is publicly available on our website. So.
Do your homework and leave us the heck alone.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, you have to laugh about it or you'd just be so depressing. You wouldn't know what to do with it. But I mean, these days, well, first of all, just as a little more background, the thing that got you in hot water, amongst other things, is that you were an advisor to the Trump legal team after the election. And that you wrote these two famous memos that you need to now be prosecuted for the remainder of your life.
Right, man. Memos which never went anywhere except with two people inside the campaign, to my knowledge, not even to President Trump. The Vice President Pence and his team admit that they never saw the memos. They were internal discussion memos exploring different scenarios. They were brainstorming memos, which lawyers do all the time. Somehow Liz Cheney decided to make me the the coup, as she called it. What a joke.
Yeah.
The real coup was that we had illegality. And as I say in our closing brief in the California bar case, there was completely unconstitutional conduct here. But the only conduct that violated clear rules of constitutional law were by the numerous state officials that ignored state election law. Because the federal constitution is absolutely clear that the power to describe the manner of choosing presidential electors is vested exclusively in the state legislature, not the secretary of state, not the county clerk in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, not even the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. It's vested exclusively in the legislature.
Yes.
And when they suspended signature verification or altered the rules on nursing home ballot harvesting or whatever, they did that without any constitutional authority. Now, there's unconstitutional action that clearly affected the outcome of the election. That's what we describe. That's what I was arguing against. But I guess, you know, if you're against the incarnation or the coronation of Joe Biden or more importantly the blocking of Donald Trump, then you're not allowed to actually make legal arguments.
Obviously you're not part of the Wisconsin 13 because they haven't made you change your core beliefs and swear that you believe that black is white and white is black and 2 + 2 = 3.
I've been going through. We actually put this in the litigation over my privileged documents fight with the J6 committee. This is George Orwell said 2 + 2 = 5, but he had some other famous lines. lines in there, right? War is peace. And I keep drawing the analogy. What's the latest buzz? You know, silence is violence. That's the same thing, right? Men can become pregnant, right? I mean, whatever it is. I mean, it's just, and you're supposed to sign on. Bill Barr said there was no fraud in the election that would have affected the outcome. He didn't say that under oath. And I want to, you know, ask them, okay, what investigations did you do? Turns out they didn't do any. Yeah. What did you look at the illegality, which, you know, is, you know, visible to the, on its face. But nobody ever cross-examined him. We're just supposed to bend the knee because he said so.
And as we are on air right now, or as we're recording this, Joe Biden is on live TV telling everybody that the January 6th insurrection was the greatest threat to democracy in the history of the United States, and we're all criminals for not admitting that, and that those people, those like us, who continue to represent that the January 6th defendants were political prisoners, we are evil and that we have to be destroyed.
This coming from the crowd that wants to keep front runners off the ballots, because keeping somebody off the ballot where the American people might actually vote for him is undemocratic.
The only way
our democracy. Yeah.
The only way to keep our democracy is to make sure that people don't have the wrong candidates to vote for.
Right. Well, and they've been doing this on the Democrat primary side for decades. They're trying to keep Robert Kennedy off of the ballot. He's finally leaving the party over it. I mean, they said, we're going to enhance democracy by giving you only one choice so that you'll vote 99% in favor of our preferred candidate. This is Stalinism.
It really is. And then there's no debates, right? No matter who wants to run against Joe Biden, even if they declare their candidacy, they're not going to be allowed to debate him, because after all, the people should only vote for who we tell them to vote for. That's the definition of democracy.
Right, right. Yeah. I remember years and years ago when I was at the Civil Rights Commission under the Reagan administration, we launched an award called the Uncivil Rights Award, right? And we gave it one year to the Newark City Council, because Peter Rodino was their congressman. And he was a white Italian guy, but he was also the co-author of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. Mm-hmm. And the black voters in Newark, New Jersey, kept voting for him. And then they'd put up a black candidate against him in the primary, and Rodino would get elected, reelected, because the voters wanted him. So they finally forced him off the thing, off the ballot, you know, just intense pressure on him, because he wasn't the candidate that they thought the voters ought to want to have.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's how we preserve democracy, by limiting your choices to the
right,
to the anointed ones. I mean, it's just, oh, my gosh. You know, there's so many things to talk about. The thing that I like the best, by the way, what's the current status of your license?
Well, I'm still an active member of the California Bar and the District of Columbia Bars.
Okay.
We filed our final closing argument briefs on December 1st, and the judge in the California Bar case has 90 days to issue a ruling.
Okay.
If she recommends disbarment, my license gets suspended immediately. Appeals, and I will certainly appeal if that's what the judgment is. One hopes that the law is faithfully applied and she will dismiss this thing out of hand.
But if
it gets appealed, it goes to an appeal judge in the bar court, and then it goes to the California Supreme Court. And because it's such an egregious violation of my free speech rights, due process rights, right to petition the government for redress of grievances, we will have grounds for asking the U.S. Supreme Court to review it as well.
So I read your closing brief, and I read the Bar Association's closing brief. But the thing I like best is that you're accused of violating this California Business and Professional Code Section 6106, which the commission of any act involving moral turpitude, dishonesty, or corruption, whether the act is committed in the course of his relations as an attorney or otherwise, and whether the act is a felony or misdemeanor or not, constitutes a cause of disbarment or suspension. I love that phrase, moral turpitude. That's what they suspended my license under as well.
Well, it's as we point out, they finally had to file a notice of error, notice of errata, because one of the things they're accusing me of is insisting that the Electoral Count Act is unconstitutional. And my advice to the president was based in large part on that. And so they at one point say, you know, the day before, the D.C. Circuit rejected the claim that the Electoral Count Act was unconstitutional. Well, the notice of errata comes in and say, oh, it wasn't the D.C. Circuit. It was the D.C. District Court. That's a big deal,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
All right. But that wasn't the worst, most egregious error, because the district court opinion that dealt with that particular case doesn't mention the Electoral Count Act. It's about state statutes where legislatures that had the authority delegated the power to the governors.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I've got to take a hard break here. Can you hang on for the next segment? Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back with Mr. John Eastman in just a second.
Get more Mark McCloskey at newstalkstl.com. More Mark McCloskey on Fire coming up on Newstalk STL. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com. Mark McCloskey on Fire. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire on Newstalk STL.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're back with Mr. John Eastman. You know, one of the things that shocked me, I give a little personal experience on this. Patty and I, my wife, were the Trump campaign in Pennsylvania for a while. We were the Team Trump bus, and we were doing seven organized rallies a day for the president. We'd pull into these towns. The streets would be lined with cheering supporters. We'd get out. We'd make our presentations. We'd get in and go to the next one. The last thing we did was a pop-up rally we did in eastern Pennsylvania, because our scheduled rally got so big that the leftist governor, Tom Wolf, shut us down. So with no notice, no advance, no nothing, we moved one county over, did a pop-up rally, had 450 screaming fans. 3 weeks later, Joe Biden was on that same stage with 3 weeks' worth of promo work, and he drew a total of eight, count them, eight people. And they want me to believe we lost Pennsylvania.
Well, as one former judge told me when I asked about the views on this, ain't no way that guy from his basement got 12 million more votes than Barack Obama did.
Yeah. And you know, and even today, Joe Biden was going on. I was listening to him on the car on the way in here. Even today, Joe Biden saying there was no evidence of voter fraud. Well, you know, you're a lawyer. I'm a lawyer. You win all kinds of cases on affidavits and summary judgment. And there were, 4,000 affidavits attesting to violations of the Voter Act and fraudulent ballots and ballot stuffing and ballot harvesting and everything else.
We've got video of State Farm Arena in Georgia. We don't know whether the ballots themselves were fraud, but we do know that people were sent home on the false pretense that they were shutting down for the night. And then after the people and the press had left, they started recounting the votes. Now, it's not illegal to count votes without observers. If the observers don't want to be there, you can't force them to be there. It is illegal to not tell the observers that you're going to start counting votes again. So every one of those votes that was counted illegally, even if it was a proper vote cast, it was counted illegally. The reason we have those observation rules is to prevent nefarious conduct. So there, that's evidence right there. We have evidence of people stuffing drop boxes with ballots and taking selfies with them so they can get paid. That's the whole 2000 mules thing that Dinesh D'Souza and Catherine Engelbrecht exposed. We've got evidence of identical handwriting on hundreds and hundreds and thousands of ballots in nursing homes in Wisconsin that was made possible by an illegal act by the secretary barring the bipartisan teams from going into the nursing homes, as the state law required. We've got 17,500 votes cast to human drop boxes in Madison, Wisconsin, which the Wisconsin Supreme Court subsequently held was illegal. The margin in that state was 20,500. So the notion that there's no evidence is laughable. Or like Chris Krebs said, it was the most secure election in our nation's history. Yeah. I mean, it's a joke. It's the big lie is that they keep saying there's no evidence.
Yeah. And then you got poor Rudy Giuliani. I mean, here he went from being America's mayor, a hero of 911, to now being a pariah because he had the audacity to point out the election fraud in Georgia. $148 million verdict against him by two election workers who, by the way, had no reputation before because nobody knew who the heck they were. could not possibly have had their reputation damaged because they had none. But $148 million, if I had a child, I'm a personal injury lawyer, if I had a child born with horrible lifetime injuries as a result of the negligence of their doctor, living a lifetime of horrible agony, no jury in the country would give me $148 million. And yet these folks awarded this against Rudy Giuliani. It is so intimidating, and it is so chilling.
Well, it's part of the problem of cases being brought in the District of Columbia right now, which was overwhelmingly hostile to Trump, both the professional class that works in the bureaus, the bureaucracies, and the underclass in Washington, D.C. And it's like 90-95% hardline Democrat leftists.
Yeah.
The notion that anybody that's not that is on the right side of the political spectrum, even a little, can get a fair trial in that is bizarre. And yet the judges have routinely denied to the J6 defendants motions to change venue so we can get a fair trial.
Yeah.
And what we see is all the extraordinarily draconian sentences handed down to the J6 defendants, but then this draconian judgment, laughably draconian judgment against Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah, it's just, as you said earlier, it's just designed to chill everybody. And then what do you think, we hadn't talked about this, but you're also a criminal defendant down there in Fulton County along with, the rest of the Western Hemisphere.
Well, you say that with a smirk, but it's right, really true. I mean, there are only 19 of us that were named, another 30 that were unnamed. But if you look at the description of the enterprise, it's an enterprise associated because of a common goal. That means anybody. I did a speech in Palm Springs, a ladies club out there, and they ended up 400 people coming, and they had to rent out the convention center to hold it. I asked them, how many of you contacted a state legislator to complain about the election and asked them to do something about it? Every hand in the room went up. I said, well, welcome and join me. You're all now part of the RICO enterprise. The way that this enterprise is defined, everybody in the country that objected to the election fraud and illegality is part of the enterprise.
Well, that includes me and my wife who's sitting over here and my producer that's sitting over there. I mean,
yep.
It's just
we'll probably see a superseding indictment adding you guys and then using this podcast as evidence. We're part of the enterprise.
Well, you probably remember this back, I think it was November of 2020. It was right after the election. AOC announced what was called the Trump Accountability Project, that everybody that worked in the Trump campaign or worked in the White House or supported Donald Trump was going to be persecuted for the rest of their lives. I mean, they were serious about that, and they are doing it to this day.
And unfortunately, there are too many Republicans who found Trump distasteful, or more importantly, found his successes on policy agendas that they'd long been mouthing but doing nothing to accomplish distasteful, are sitting on the sidelines or joining the forces on the other side.
Yeah, and, just,
and that's what I find. I mean, that lefty Marxists are going after me doesn't surprise me. I've been dealing with that since I was at the Civil Rights Commission with Ronald Reagan's administration. What irks me is that there are too many Republicans and so-called conservatives that are either sitting on the sidelines or joining in the attacks.
Yeah.
And you know, this is the silver lining here is they're being exposed.
Yeah.
The Lincoln Project folks are being exposed. I mean, they're signing on to radical Democratic agendas because they are so blinded by their hatred of Donald Trump that they can't even see what's being accomplished.
Yeah. Well, and it's two things. One is people are afraid that if they don't come out against Trump, they're going to get persecuted and prosecuted, jailed. And the prosecution is a punishment in itself because so many of these people can't afford lawyers. So many lawyers won't take on the cases for fear of what we were talking about earlier. And it just drives you into the ground. And that's the purpose of it, to make people know that if you don't toe the line, if you back the wrong candidate, if you have the wrong opinions, we will destroy you. And not, we won't just punish you, we will destroy you. And it's not enough to have you go to jail. You have to be broke. You have to be broken. And then you have to swear to God that you believe in something you know is absolutely false.
Right. No, that's right. And I got a call from a reporter at the LA Times. They were wanting to do a feature story on me saying, you know, how depressed and how this has broken me and how it's taken a toll on me and my family. And I said, I don't know where you're getting that story. Our country's in a battle. It's, you know, not in taking up arms like it was in 1861. But the consequences of this battle may be as grave as that one was. And I said, I happen, for whatever reason, to have been thrust into the forefront of this battle in a position to do something about it. And with my background, I may be as well equipped as almost anybody in the country to be able to push back on this. So I consider it a high honor that I'm in the forefront of this, and I'm doing I can to push back against these falsities. People can join me. I've put I named there on the bottom our legal defense fund website, givesendgo.com/Eastman. Our latest estimate is probably this is going to end up running between $3 and $3.5 million when all said and done. I've been dealing with 14 days, the California bar, the DC bar, the Supreme Court bar, the Georgia indictment, unindicted co-conspirator in DC. There was one from North Carolina where they named me as the lead defendant, and Donald Trump and Ivanka and Sean Hannity and Fox and Mark Zuckerberg, who, you know, kind of on the other side. But one of the allegations was that every one of us was a billionaire oligarch. Just in case your audience needs to know, I'm not a billionaire nor an oligarch, and we could use some help.
I was going to say, you're hiding your $1 billion pretty well, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly.
let me ask you this. How concerned are you that some of your co-defendants down in Fulton County, like Ken Cheesebrough and Jenna Ellis and Sidney Powell, have pled guilty?
Well, you know, I don't begrudge any of them having made that decision. Ken Cheesebrough and Sidney Powell took a bit of a gamble and sought a speedy trial, anticipating that there's no way the DA is going to be ready to put this massive trial on. And then they filed a bunch of motions to dismiss, which the judge rejected in rulings that he has now held were preliminary, and we can all revisit them if we want. But then they were looking at handling the entire bulk of the DA's case over 3 or 4 months with full legal teams on everything covered by the RICO charges, which involves everybody. And it would be $1 million or $2 million each in legal fees. So that versus paying a $5,000 fine and signing a letter saying, I apologize. And here's the important thing. Sidney Powell pleaded to a half a dozen misdemeanors, no jail time. Mm-hmm. Ken Cheesebrough pleaded guilty to a single felony, no jail time. But important to note, in both of these, the way it works in Georgia under the first offender statute, which was part of the plea deal, neither one of them plea deals gets accepted by the court. The court holds them in abeyance until their probationary period runs, and then he rejects the plea and dismisses the case with prejudice. Judgment of guilt or conviction of guilt is ever entered. So given those, it's not hard to see why they took those deals. I've looked at the proffers. They are unfortunately sealed, but I've looked at them, and I guarantee you there's nothing in there that is at all detrimental to me, my positions, to President Trump. In fact, I may call them as witnesses, given what their proffers are.
Yeah, you know, the press obviously didn't report what you just described as a process. We call that SIS in Missouri, suspend an imposition of sentence. If you do your probationary period, you have no conviction. It's wiped, and you're as if it never happened. I did not know that about Georgia. I learned something new today.
Yeah, no, it's not that you have to get it expunged after the fact. There's never any conviction entered. Now, if they violate their parole or, you know, whatever, then it gets entered automatically. But if they keep their noses clean for the 3 years or 5 years or whatever the parole sentence is, there's no conviction ever entered against them. And so they could honestly say on any future bar application or court, have you ever been convicted? The answer is no.
Yeah, well, that's great. I did not know that, and that's wonderful. Well, you know, It is such an upside down world. You never know whether George Orwell was a prophet or whether he was a organizer of the conspiracy, because his words have come so true. But you now have a situation in this country where I'm sitting right now in the city of St. Louis. City of St. Louis proper has got 286,000 residents. Last month in December, we had 302,000 illegal immigrant encounters at the southern border. That's just the ones we know of. That would make the immigrant invasion of the known immigrants last month the 70th largest city in the country. And we've got a president that is violating the law, allowing that to happen, and a director of Homeland Security and everybody else who's just sitting on their hands, encouraging an invasion on our borders. And they're talking about Donald Trump leading an insurrection.
Right. Well, no, the true insurrection was the unconstitutionality of the conduct of the election, the criminal use of our law enforcement. I mean, look, in 2016, the Department of Justice falsified documents to obtain warrants to spy on the opposing political candidate. This is the greatest political scandal in our nation's history, and it's been shoveled under the rug like nothing happened. Yeah. They actively engaged in censoring political speech at the heat of a presidential campaign in 2020, the Biden laptop story, the Facebook and Twitter files that we now know, government agencies directing social media platforms to block messages they don't like. This is about as un-American and unconstitutional in the political arena as it gets. And all of that goes unaddressed while they're making up these phony, farcical charges against all of us that are trying to fight back against it.
And as I said, when I was on the campaign, when I was running for Senate in the last cycle, where were all the Republican senators? Where were all the Republican members of the House of Representatives? How come every Republican in D.C. wasn't standing on the Capitol steps screaming, we cannot have stuff like this in a Democratic Republic. We cannot have this with the Constitution of the United States. If the president wants to ignore the Constitution, why aren't there? And if the FBI and the Department of Justice are in a conspiracy to control the election, where the heck is the outrage?
Yeah, no, I know. Part of the problem is there's a lot of money floating around in D.C. and a lot of people that have done nothing in their life except hold office have become very wealthy doing so. That's not the vision that our founders had for elective office. There's so much graft and corruption and money being flown out, if not directly to the members of Congress, to members of their families, who are getting wealthy beyond imagination on this stuff. And they don't want that apple cart upset. One of the reasons they hated Trump so much was because he was upsetting the apple cart.
Yeah.
And now, after 4 years, he now knows where a lot more of the bodies are buried, and he's even more dangerous to that apple cart, you know, than he was before.
Well, let me I'm going to have to take another break here. Can you hang on for a couple of more minutes?
Yeah, a couple more minutes.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back with John Eastman.
Get more Mark McCloskey at NewstalkSTL.com. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire on Newstalk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on NewstalkSTL.com.
Mark McCloskey on Fire. You're listening to Mark McCloskey on Fire on News Talk STL.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're back with John Eastman, what the left would love to be able to create as a political prisoner, but he's fighting back. John, as a lawyer, you know, we hear all the time, for example, in these different persecutions of Donald Trump, that his lawyers have been ordered to testify against him and disclose confidential information. How important is it to the administration of justice in this country for people to be able to have confidential communications with their lawyers?
Well, one of the oldest privileges in Anglo-American jurisprudence is the attorney-client privilege. Because long ago, centuries and centuries ago, before the American regime was even in existence, our English forebears recognized that if you cannot have open and confidential communications with your attorney, then you are not going to have well representation in an adversarial system of justice. It's absolutely critical to the adversarial system that people can let their attorney in confidence know all of the facts of a case so that the attorney can properly structure the best legal argument to advocate zealously on behalf of that client, which the attorney is ethically obligated to do. You destroy the attorney-client privilege, people will say, I'm not telling my attorney anything. And then the attorney will be going into court blind. The whole thing will become a farce, which I fear is what – it's not a collateral consequence of what they're doing. It may for them be added benefit or added icing on the cake for what they're doing, mm-hmm. to destroy another aspect of the brilliant American constitutional system.
And, you know, a client comes in and they've got an issue with you, and they toss things back and forth. What if I did this? What if I said that? It's a lawyer's job to say, well, if you do this, you know, the law says such and such. I think we might be able to, there's an argument that you could say such and such. But if you say so and so, you're in deep doo-doo and I can't help you out. And so tell me what really happened. If you can't have that honest conversation with your client, you cannot zealously represent them and you cannot get to the core of the truth and you can't do your job as a lawyer.
That's right. No, it's and they have stretched the exception to attorney-client privilege, the crime fraud exception. Right? If the lawyer is part of the criminal act, that the lawyer is working with a non-lawyer to decide how to rob the bank, those communications are not protected by the attorney-client privilege. But what we're talking about is stuff after the fact. Here's what we want to do. What can we do? The lawyer giving advice. This is not criminal. It's not under any stretch subject to the crime fraud exception. And yet the looseness of that exception that has been applied in all these cases has really completely undermined the attorney-client privilege. And it's going to have devastating consequences for our adversarial system for years. Mark, I've got to go pretty quick. If I might give one more plug for my legal defense fund, folks, we've raised happily over $500,000 there, but we need to get to closer to $3 million before we're done here in the next couple of months. GiveSendGo.com/Eastman. The other advantage of that site is people are able to send prayers as well as donations to it. And my wife and I read those and they are heartwarming and they help us keep going and keeping up this fight. So thank you all for at least we also use it as a blog to kind of post articles that I think are that get it and are really telling the story of what's going on. We'll probably post the link to this when you put it up as well.
Well, we will. We'll post it and I'm going to encourage everybody to contribute. It's great that there is somebody like you who's willing to stand up against this onslaught of the deep state trying to destroy us. If they can destroy you, they can destroy everybody. And by God, that's their goal. Thank you very much for being on the show, and we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you, Mark. Take care.
Well, that was John Eastman, former counsel for President Donald Trump, co-defendant in the Fulton County, Georgia boondoggle, being persecuted for his law license around the country for having the audacity to tell the truth. The truth is a crime in the United States these days. If you get arrested for telling the truth, if you hire a lawyer, your lawyer is going to get arrested for representing you for telling the truth. And once the truth becomes unassailable, then the last recourse is to try to disbar the lawyer, right? This is the state of the United States right now. And it's not just John Eastman. It's not just Rudy Giuliani. It's not just Donald Trump. It's not Jenna Ellis and Sidney Powell and Ken Cheesebrough. It's all around the country. Think about Carrie Lake. Carrie Lake made claims based on absolutely valid information, claims that everybody in Arizona actually believes is the truth, that the election was fixed and that she should be the governor. But guess what? She's being prosecuted for it. She's being sued for it. Her lawyers are being sued for it. There are lawyers who are currently having their license challenged in the state of Arizona, Andrew Parker, Brian Blem, Kurt Olson, for taking the position that they could represent Carrie Lake and advocate for her position that there was fraud in the election. So here you have political speech. You have people running for political office. You've got Carrie Lake. You've got Donald Trump. You've got any number of people. You've got Scott Perry in Pennsylvania now. who are being prosecuted and persecuted for stating political opinions that the powers that be don't like. When they get sued or when they get charged, they hire lawyers. Their lawyers get charged. Their lawyers get sued. In the case of Rudy Giuliani, once again, I can't tell you how appalling I find this. You got two nobody election workers in Fulton County, Georgia, who are on video, amongst other things, pulling suitcases full of ballots out from under a table. Somebody whose name you've never heard, somebody whose name you never will hear, who get a $148 million verdict against Rudy Giuliani for telling publicly what he honestly believes. If telling the truth, or telling even what you believe to be the truth, if you're a Republican, if that becomes criminal, where on the other side of the ticket, a Democrat can say whatever they want to with impunity, then there's nothing that resembles freedom in this country any longer. The one hope you had in this country, if you're a criminal defendant, is you would have an opportunity for a fair trial in front of a jury of your peers being represented by an attorney of your choice. And as they always say on television, if you so desire and cannot afford one, one will be appointed for you at public expense. That's the Sixth Amendment to the Constitution. Well, you're no longer afforded that. The January 6th defendants, for example, who couldn't afford attorneys, those political prisoners were assigned public defenders. You know what the public defenders told them? You're guilty. You should go to jail. You should repent from worshiping that false god, Donald Trump. You should claim that you were deceived, that you would never report, you would never support him again. You should prostrate yourself before the god of deep state, apologize for your wrongs, and maybe we'll let you off with only a few months in prison for the crime of having walked peacefully and patriotically through the open doors of the Capitol building, opened by the Capitol Police, walking between the velvet ropes and exiting the building. And ladies and gentlemen, I happen to know people that are doing years in prison for doing absolutely no more than that. And that is not the United States of America. That is not a free country. And it's what we are allowing to happen. And when I say we, I mean Republicans, okay? Because we, as Republicans, for example, control the checkbook right now in D.C. We have a majority in the House of Representatives. We can stop the government dead in its tracks if we're willing to withhold money, if we're not willing to pass one continuing resolution after another to fund this corrupt, bloated, dishonest, unpatriotic, un-American, un-Christian, ungodlike government. And they refuse to do it. We had Congressman Eric Burleson on the program a couple of weeks ago, and I wish I could remember exactly what he said, but I think that we've been functioning as a government, the United States government, without a budget for, what, 29 years? Continuing resolution after continuing resolution, trillions of dollars after trillions of dollars. You got the president engaging in and encouraging all kinds of unconstitutional behavior, including an unquestionable invasion at the border. I mentioned this in talking with John Eastman, but in the month of December, 302,000 illegal immigrant encounters. What that means is these are people that cross the border, turn themselves in, and then were released by Border Patrol with a blank check to come back whenever they damn well please some distant years down the future. But those are just the ones that turn themselves in or are known. So let's say, arguably half again as many, so maybe 450,000 illegal immigrants in 1 month, 800,000 known immigrant encounters in this quarter, 800,000. I mean, there are states in the United States that don't have 800,000 residents. I think South Dakota doesn't have 800,000 residents. Kristi Noem isn't the governor of as many people as we had illegal aliens come into the country in the last quarter. And you go down there on the border. I've been there. Patty's been there. It is an active engagement between our government and the cartels to bring over as many illegal aliens as possible. This is a direct, obvious, and open attempt to undermine the sovereignty of the United States, to devalue the average actual American citizen. They come over. They're given a cell phone. By the way, did somebody give you a cell phone? They're given a plane ticket or a bus ticket. And by the way, the last time you went on a trip on an airplane, did you have to show somebody an ID? Did you have to go through what I call the full butt sniffing, where you either go through the snifferoo or you get patted down? You ever go on the airplane and you see these 90-year-old ladies getting lifted out of their wheelchairs so they can be patted down by the Gestapo to make sure that they know that they're just, you know, traveling at the mercy of the almighty God of government, and if we don't like you, we can punish you, and then you're an illegal alien. You come up here from south of the border. You come in from Yemen or Uganda or the Philippines or Venezuela or Cuba or any place in the world without documentation, making up any name you want to. The government lets you cross the border for free, puts you on an airplane for free. You don't have to show identification. You don't have to show any proof of inoculation. You could be carrying every kind of deadly communicable disease, which has not been seen in the United States in decades. For example, all the cases of tuberculosis we're now seeing, put on an airplane, given a stipend of $2,200 a month, and set loose on the American people. Well, this week, Eric Adams, the mayor of New York City, decided that he needs to issue an executive order charging charter bus companies, $780 million for what they've cost New York in bringing up illegal aliens. You got to appreciate the absolute irony and nonsense of a Democrat mayor in a Democrat city, in a Democrat state, in a Democrat country that encourages this unlimited invasion of our southern border, then saying it's perfectly okay to have an open border as long as they sure as hell don't come to my city, okay? And they sure as hell don't come into my neighborhood, because we love illegal aliens. We love our open borders. We love to be a sanctuary city, but don't you bring them here, because we'll charge you criminally if you do. They changed the law, right, this executive order, so that it's a crime to bring illegal aliens to have buses come into New York City except on scheduled hours and under certain circumstances. So now they're dropping them off on the Jersey side, and they're taking the shuttle over. And now, because Mayor Adams' efforts to stop the invasion of those illegal aliens that he invites in, he tried to thwart them by not allowing them to come in directly by bus. Now they're coming in indirectly by bus. So by God, the bus companies have to pay the price. You know, no one looks upstream and says, hey, Joe Biden, maybe you ought to enforce the laws that are actually on the books. The problem isn't just the Democrats. The problem is the Republicans, too, because as I said with John Eastman, when all these unconstitutional, when all these illegal, when all these un-American things are done, how come there's not every single one, man and woman, Republican representatives and senators, how come they're not all standing on the steps of the courthouse, standing on the steps of the Supreme Court, standing on the steps of the Capitol building, just screaming at the top of their lungs, we cannot have this in a free republic. We cannot have this in our constitutional republic. We cannot have this in the United States of America. We can't have state-sponsored censorship. We can't have the criminalization of political thought. We cannot have the destruction of attorney-client privilege. We cannot have these things and have a free country. Well, ladies and gentlemen, because they're all a bunch of stinking cowards. They're in these jobs because they want power. They're in these jobs because they want money. You got a United States congressman that makes $174,000 a year, travels all over the world, flies on private jets, vacations in nice locations, owns multiple houses, and by the way, makes millions and millions of dollars in the stock market. And then when they get done and they retire, guess what? They make even more money as lobbyists, selling their influence back to the very institutions that they just left. You know, I've been a Republican my whole life, but I'm kind of embarrassed to say it. As Chip Roy said a couple of weeks ago and down in Texas, now that we've had a majority in Congress for a year, show me one thing we can be proud of. Show me one thing that we can go back to our district and brag about that we, as a Republican majority in the House of Representatives, have accomplished during this year. And the answer is not a darn thing. And that's because we have these things called RINOs, Republicans in name only. And they're more dangerous than any Democrat, because when a Democrat does something underhanded, we look at it, we wait for it, and we try to fight it. But when we've got a Republican majority, we say, they're Republicans, they're on our side, we don't have to pay attention. ladies and gentlemen, that's when you've got to pay attention the most. You got to drive the rhinos out. Don't vote for them unless they're actually America first. Make America great again, genuine Republicans, because if we don't do it now, if we don't do it in this election cycle, we'll never have this country again. The United States of America will cease to resemble anything you knew in the past if we don't win this cycle now. And I believe that in my heart of hearts. This country is at a precipice that we will never recover from unless we stop that fall today.
Get more Mark McCloskey at NewstalkSTL.com. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire on Newstalk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on NewstalkSTL.com.